In this special podcast episode, The Life of Merlin, we take you back to Vienna, to the year 1865, where we find Edward Medinger is ready to leave behind all that he has known. This young man, not yet 18, has grown up in a life of privilege, a life of profits. He dreams not of the wealth his family built with machines, but of a life rich in adventure, in yearning for places he has never been, a place where he might find himself beyond the reach of his father's ambitions. For what is wealth, he wonders, if it cannot buy the freedom to dream? And so, as Vienna sleeps beneath its cover of coal dust, Edward Medinger makes his plans in the moonlight to cross oceans and continents to a Japan he has only glimpsed in pictures, but feels destined to embrace. What you're about to hear is a collection of poignant excerpts from diaries and letters, offering intimate look into the personal thoughts, struggles, and hopes during Medinger's journey. We hear from the great-grandson, Gregor Medinger, and by delving into the pages of the young Austrian pioneer's journal, he traces the rich and rugged history of Edward Merlin, uncovering his journey of his hardship, resilience, and discovery as he forged a path into the unknown.
First learned about the story of my great-grandfather, Edward Medinger, who, not yet 18, ran away from Vienna. He ran away because his father had been a very successful industrialist, and with that came social activity. He had an older brother who was a social tiger, dances, balls, and so on. He was interested in adventure, and he had been able to travel to Hamburg. He must have been in a choir, because later said it was in a singing excursion. But he was not very social. He could not easily communicate. And he was dreaming of going far, far away. This was the time when Japan was sort of in papers and books. But he dreamed of going to Japan. Little boys always think of running away from time to time and eventually come back.
Medinger made his mind up to leave his comfortable life, and he started crafting a plan to get to Japan.
I wanted to leave Vienna on a Saturday afternoon on the express train of the Western Railway, which would give me 36 to 48 hours, enough time to get me to London. If I took the route via Prussia and Belgium, I only needed to stop at the Austrian border. When I arrived in London, I wanted to ask the captain of a ship bound for China and Japan to take me along in exchange for work. In a short time, I hoped to return home, happy, rich, great, independent, and free.
And the amazing thing is he had a passport because he had gone to Germany. With whatever savings he had, he left Vienna by train, had only one control, it was of the border to Germany, no more passport controls into Belgium.
I was not worried about the means for my journey. I had my valuables and about 100 gulden of money. This small sum seemed enough to me to cover the travel expenses to London and to live there for a week.
Took a ferry to Dover, to England.
At 3:30, we saw the white chalk cliffs of England, with Dover beautifully set upon them. At 4:00, I boarded the express train to London. The first-class carriage in which I was seated was 10 times worse than the Austrian second-class carriages. But the speed of our journey leaves nothing to be desired as we travel from Dover to London, about as far as from Vienna to Brno in 2 hours. First, the railroad goes over rocks high above the sea, then the train rushes at breakneck speed through tunnels, mountains, and valleys, past the Crystal Palace at Sydenham, finally over the houses and streets of London suburbs to London Bridge Station, and you are right in the heart of the largest and richest city in the world.
And then in London, tried to find a ship to Japan. He was found one ship, was unable to communicate with the captain because he didn't have a passenger fare and he wanted to work.
From the station, I let myself be guided to Hahn's Hotel American Square, which was described in Gribin's travel guide as it was a small, cheap hotel where mainly ship captains stayed. The landlord and his wife were Germans, with a pleasant, agreeable demeanor. The next morning, I checked the ship advertisements in the Times and found the ship, Fusijama, was listed as the only next opportunity to Yokohama, Japan.
I was very disappointed because he could not get on the boat. There was no other Japanese boat. So all his cash he had, his watch, was stolen. There he was, without any money.
In a letter, we learn how Edward Medinger's plan to travel the world is quickly changed after he stumbles across a gang of London's finest con men.
I arrived in London, and there the disappointments began. The unsuccessfulness of my efforts for passage to Japan, the ignorance of the language, the confusion of names, the theft of my watch, necklace, and money all came unexpectedly and had a numbing effect on me.
Walking back from the docks after missing his opportunity to go east, Medinger feels his plan to travel the world is starting to unravel. As he approaches London Tower, he hears shouts in his native tongue.
And saw a party of strangers, some of whom I heard speaking German. The clear leader of the group was a gentleman who was finely and elegantly dressed and had already caught my eye with his pleasant, courteous demeanor. The well-dressed Swiss invited me to drink a glass of ale.
Hey there. Come with me. Drink an ale with me. There is a place around the corner where they give Germans ale for gratis.
I refused the request at first.
Tonight we celebrate. Tomorrow we find you that ticket to Japan.
The man repeated his invitation so that in the end I could not help myself.
Two ales for two Germans.
The saloon was finely furnished, but there were only a few guests. One of them, when he heard us speaking German, seemed pleased and expressed this in broken German.
Your German is bad. Where are you from?
I'm not German. I'm a Serb, but I live in Brazil.
He came from Brazil, where he had large estates, and told us about his circumstances, down to the smallest detail. The Serb man was tall, with a red facial complexion, was very well dressed, and wore a splendid watch and chain. But one thing struck me, there was something so unsteady and childish about his behavior and his confused speech that the man was not quite in full possession of his senses. I now wanted to leave, but was held back by the Serb, who said I must not leave until I had drunk a glass of some kind of punch with him to good countrymanship.
You can't leave. Don't leave. Not yet. Not without having a glass of punch with me.
While this punch was being prepared, the Serb turned to an Englishman that was drinking ale.
I wager any man here, that I can throw this small coin into the floor and make it stick.
I will take that wager.
After watching a few attempts, this seemed impossible to me. And the Serb lost, and then the Serb lost again.
Let's play again, and one more punch for the kraut.
The Serb paid considerable sums from a wallet filled with gold and banknotes. Because of the constant loss, he seemed to become more and more excited. He would bet again, and lost again.
Give me that coin! We go again.
The Swiss man, who was following the bet with interest, said to me,
"This Serb is not very clever. He wants to give it all away. Who am I to stand in his way?"
So he accepted the bet and won a nice sum in a short time. He now asked me to do so, to follow his example, and also to bet. I replied that I didn't think it was right to take money from a man who seemed half crazy.
"This is an opportunity to earn money so easily. Just think, you could be on first class on the way to Japan."
The next thing I know, I'm moving my watch and chain to a neighboring pawn shop. I hardly needed to write about what happened next. In short, half an hour later, I had lost the 5 sovereigns that I received for the watch and chain and all my cash. The Swiss man tried to appease me and promised to refund the money I had lost through his fault.
"This is all my fault. I feel horrible. I want to refund you. Would you follow me to my bank? There I can give you money for the ticket, but it's across town. We must go before it closes."
We went to the city. Outside the bank was bustling with activity.
"Wait here, I'll be right back."
He slipped out of my sight in the crowd, and I didn't see him again. I rushed as quickly as my feet could carry me to the drinking parlor where we had last been. But the Serb and the entire company had already disappeared. The whole connection now gradually became clear to me. The elegant, fine Swiss man, the various German-speaking gentlemen in the tower, the Serb with fake money on vacation, the innkeeper who probably had a small piece of soft wood inserted into the hard floor. The coin couldn't have gotten stuck in this one. All of these gentlemen belonged, as I said, to an experienced London gang of crooks whose first victim wasn't me. Everyone had played their role excellently, especially the Swiss, who brought me into the salon and talked to me so nicely and encouraged me to believe that the Serb was half crazy. The Swiss man took it upon himself to take me away from the scene of the crime under the pretext of getting my money and thereby giving the others the opportunity to leave. As I later realized, with cold blood, it was just a well-deserved punishment and a warning for the future. Every time I wanted to check the clock and reached into my empty waistcoat pocket, I was overcome by a foolish anger against myself. I desperately slapped my head and exclaimed, "But Edward, why so stupid?"
What is the choice? He goes back to the Austrian embassy and to admit that he had failed, that he didn't want to do that. So he pawned his cufflinks, a nice pair of cufflinks, given the family had been doing well. And he got the cheapest ticket on an emigrant ship to New York. He had changed his name as he boarded a ship in London because he was afraid there might be agents and they might be looking in the, for lists for runaways. Mettinger changed his name to Merlin.
Edward Merlin. M-E-R-L-I-N. Merlin.
And that's the name he used for his stay in the United States.
I left London on a sailing ship bound for New York and was at sea for 53 days, to be exact. 53 days of agony and endless misery in the steerage of an overrun emigrant ship.
His coat was stolen and he came off the ship, took lodging at an inn. He had a suitcase. I know the contents of the suitcase, the books he had brought with him, the number of underpants, everything.
I was able to dock without a cruiser's worth of money, and now the bitter reality came to me in all its might. I had to. I myself, Edward, who had left Vienna with romantic plans, had to earn my bread through hard labor in order to drown myself, or, to put it more simply, in order not to starve to death, too.
He found a job carrying bread to the port for a baker, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning and coming home at home to the inn at midnight. At midnight, he started writing employment applications.
Edward's pride is keeping him from reaching out to his parents in Austria for help. And sometimes during his long, sleepless nights, he questions running away from his inheritance.
Today marks 3 months since I arrived in the strange, sprawling city they call New York. It is a world so different from Vienna that I often feel as though I've stepped into another lifetime altogether. The streets here are louder than any I have known, filled with the shouts of vendors, the clatter of horses' hooves, and the constant murmur of so many languages mixed together. English, yes, but also German, Italian, Irish, and tongues I do not even recognize.
Was kicked out after a week because he didn't have money to pay and he didn't have a job. But as a young gentleman in those days, he had traveled with a gun and he sold his gun on the street of New York. That brought him enough cash to pay for the lodging he owed, getting back his suitcase. It's hard work to be in America, but you can be successful. And eventually he found a job in what you refer to as a drugstore in New York. And after a year, he decided, you know, okay, I know New York. I need to do more. I want excitement. He went to New Orleans.
Last night, I wandered into the French Quarter. The narrow streets twisted like a maze, and I could hear laughter spilling out from the taverns and gambling halls. I passed a courtyard where a group of musicians was playing, and for a moment, I was transfixed. The music was wild and free, like nothing I've ever heard in Vienna. It was as if the notes themselves were alive.
New Orleans, he also describes that he couldn't afford a lodging with a white family. So he took lodging with what he described as a colored family. He worked for a year in a larger store with import, export, whatever in New Orleans.
Back home in Austria, Edward's parents were worried sick, having no idea where on the globe he was headed. They spared no expense and started sending reward posters around the world in hopes of finding their youngest son.
Please, please, I beg you, please find my son.
Meanwhile, I should say, his parents, of course, were desperate, knowing where he was, where did he go, and they started to correspond, of course, first with the Austrian Foreign Office to ask for the various foreign services and offices to try to make advertising. And they also placed advertising in all the countries he thought he might be, including the United States, Australia, Brazil. And I have the book with the clippings of all these advertisings where they were desperately asking her son to come back or to ask anybody who knew his whereabouts to write to them.
In part two, we follow Mettinger's exploration west in a hunt for riches. He blindly chases gold as he gets further and further away from his homeland.